Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello and welcome to After Things. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Justin Robert Young.
Hello, everybody. It's me.
Brian Brushwood.
Yo.
Mr. Bryce Castillo.
Hi, everybody. That's me.
You know what I thought we could talk about here is our motivation techniques. Mine are imperfect. They don't always work, but I have some that sometimes work and maybe be helpful to other people. You know, I'm in the middle of trying to finish a novel, and sometimes it goes really well. Sometimes I just sit around all day thinking about what I need to do. But what I found works best is there's being mentally prepared, like being psychologically ready to do it, and then having everything I need to do it. Now, for me to write a book to do it, I need an outline. I need a pretty good chapter breakdown where I know what the conflict is. So when I sit down to write, I have a clear idea. This is what the characters are trying to accomplish. If it's just an info dump, if it's just like this happens, not as good for me, and it takes me longer to write it. Psychologically, or to get myself ready, one of my little things I do is when it's time for me to write, one is I get very comfortable. Like, I'm wearing jeans. I'll actually wear, like, loose shorts, which probably means I'm, like, pre-diabetes or something. I don't know. But anyhow, I try to get very comfortable. I have my noise-canceling headphones if I need them, which right here. I highly recommend those. I have a soundtrack I listen to, instrumental music, movie music, whatever, that I play that just sort of helps me zone out everything else out around me. And then for a little bit of energy, I go drink a fruit smoothie. I get one of those from the store, just like the fruit juice and pulp sort of things. And I drink maybe 6 or 8 ounces of that. And I find that energy wise, my energy levels go up because of course the fruit sugars are in me peak, and I sit down to write and it works out really well. So, and that's my little routine.
And so that is something where you are definitely, you're in front of a computer. Like, this is having to force yourself to go and make progress every day to make sure that you're doing work that you're not going to wind up wanting to go back and change. But good quality stuff that is advancing the ball down the field. Those are all the prep things.
Yeah, and I would say that's when it's hey, it's time to write and get motivated. The big trigger for me, the motivated, is like, I need to go do this, is that go drink that fruit smoothie, go drink a little bit of that fruit juice, have my music to sort of distract me from everything else around me, and then sit down and get in the zone. And, I've talked about this before. Like, I'm a big believer, like, don't get too precious about these things. Like, I'll write on my iPhone standing in line at a movie theater if I need to. Like, I'm a big believer, like, just get it done. But if I'm feeling like just lethargic and no inertia, this works best for me. This is the thing that gets me out of bed. This is the thing that gets me to go work, is to just sort of have that, get the fruit juice, get the music, sit down and just go at it. How about you guys?
A little thing I like to call deadlines, do or die moments constantly coming at you, and oh crap, I'm really screwed if I don't get this done, or if I don't, I don't know, something about, what's funny is your whole routine is about getting comfortable to become productive. And I have found I'm the reverse. I don't seem to get productive unless I'm deeply uncomfortable and looking at massive more discomfort. And then it's like, okay, it's time. And in fact, that goes back even to the stage shows, where the way I got good is by committing to a certain open mic night, getting myself on the schedule or whatever, having it cast in stone that I needed to figure out these problems that I knew with the routine beforehand. And then, it would get closer and closer and closer, and you get to that do or die moment. And then all of a sudden, I don't know, that's when inspiration hits. My dad used to tell me nothing inspires creativity like a deadline. And so, most of my career has been spent trying to put myself in a position where I got to get stuff figured out. If not at the last minute, then at least knowing a last minute is coming, so I can steep and percolate on it, so that, at a subconscious level, you're thinking through all the logistical problems, and then finally it comes to snap judgment, make a decision mode, and you're able to get stuff done.
I hear you. Like, I have a deadline right now, but the problem is that this deadline is still like over a month away. And I will wait. Normally I will wait until I'm like 2 weeks out and then I'll get it done because the deadline's there. But I'm like, yeah, if I wait, I'm not going to get these other things I want done. And that's been the thing I've been trying to juggle, is to get out of the, you know, coming from an entertaining role, you know, performing role too, is I get that. I had anxiety attacks about not having my magic show ready for years, you know, and I'm a big believer, like, throw your hat over the fence and create this deadline that's impending upon you. And, you know, now in the publishing world, I have very, very, very real deadlines, but I'm like, I have all these other things I want to do. And if I procrastinate too much, if I play too many video games and do this stuff, I don't get to do those other things. And I've been trying to figure out ways to, like, just get it done, you know, from just entirely through internal motivation.
Yeah. You know, I had a live show this week, and I had kind of thrown my hat over the wall a few, maybe probably 2 months ago, to do it as like a presentation of me making jokes about the debates that happened, right? And on one hand, it was great because I didn't have to worry for many, many weeks about rehearsing or writing or doing anything, because I just knew that it was, everything was going to kind of come down in this a very short period of time, and I had to get something stage ready in a you know, fairly quick turnaround, a very quick turnaround. But part of that, you know, in general, I guess, to kind of break it down to the essence in terms of motivation, the dream is creating deadlines in your head that you are going to honor, right? Is being able to harness what Brian's talking about the, like, okay, I need to be, I'm going to only be more uncomfortable if I don't get this done now. At least for me, it's like, okay, well, how can I make that in my own head? How can I summon that in any way? And then beyond that, like Andrew said, in terms of like knowing what I need so I can maximize the time that I am putting in, I have to be smarter about exactly how I'm going about doing everything. So it's like for this show, the big thing that ultimately wound up being very helpful was that instead of just saying to myself, all right, I'm going to watch these debates again, take down all my notes of what I want, the clips I want, the funny moments, and then editing all the little clips out, that I would take as detailed a notes as I could while I was live streaming my reactions initially, and kind of soft build the show even as I am just like watching it, just to kind of a keep it fresh and have a little bit of a better idea of like what I want to talk about. Now, I then went and pulled those clips on Friday and I'm like, okay, well, some of these jokes aren't as funny as I thought in the moment. Some of them really do work. And that was it. I was very happy that Friday became an editing process as opposed to a creation process. And that's something that I had to learn, you know, after a while, because, you know, there's always, for me, man, there's no amount of work that I can't put on future me's plate. Like, oh man, do I love that future me? Always a hard worker. Not like present me. Like, I deserve a break. So let me go ahead and do stuff like that. But being able to take a little bit of that eye off the ball of the live stream and give myself a roadmap as it was happening wound up being huge, and I think it contributed to the show going well.
All four of us, do we all work out of the home generally? I know we shoot out
the field,
studio,
yeah.
But like Andrew and Justin, you guys also all just kind of work in your apartments?
I tend not to outline here. Like, if I need to do outlines, like, I have a stack of note cards and I'll go somewhere to go do that. Although lately, like, I've been doing more outlining here because just time constraint. But yeah, I work from home, and you know, and that's the problem, because home is where we have all the other distractions.
Yeah. I remember reading an interview with this Japanese music producer who's been doing it for probably 20, 25 years now. And over the past few decades, he's written literally hundreds of songs, right? He's worked with a bunch of groups and just bangs out tons of songs constantly. And I remember in the interview, they were asking him, like, how do you come up with, you know, all these lyrics and all these, you know, basic compositions for these songs? And he said, I go into an office and I sit down and I have the set amount of time that I'm working on writing music. And that's the time when I'm writing music. And I think having that external location, right, somewhere where it's not just, you know, a couple feet away, even in a home office room, but it's somewhere you got to walk to or drive to, really gets you motivated to be working. And even, you know, good stuff, bad stuff, it gets you going because you're not at home surrounded by distractions.
Well, and weirdly, this is, we're talking about productivity, but it's also true on the exact opposite. When it comes to establishing healthy sleep patterns, they say one thing is your bed is for sleeping, possibly one other activity, but nothing else. It's not for hanging out in. It's not for looking at your cell phone. It's not for, you know, playing video games in. Because your body responds to all of those cues.
Yeah.
When everything about your surroundings says this is the workplace, this is the place where working happens, then you tend to snap to and just be like, well, engage subroutine, accomplish work, and then and likewise, you know, this is the sleep place. This is where the world goes away.
Yeah. Ben, you want to know what the funniest thing is? Is like, so we set up this entire studio here. We moved our bed out of what was our bedroom, and now we have a Murphy bed in our living room. So we sleep in our living room, and then we have this entire studio, and it's two computers and all sorts. I could literally set the lights to anything I possibly want to be the most productive that I could be, and I can't get work done here. Like, I have found myself that, like, this is a performance spot. This is a spot where I can interact with the show. I can record podcasts. But in general, I oftentimes in my head associate this with, all right, I'm live streaming and now I'm done live streaming. So what do I immediately do? Just try to not focus on being on and screw around on the internet and like immediately get on Reddit, immediately get on Twitter, immediately read through all the other stuff that I need to read through. And some of that stuff I can justify more than others. I can say, oh, well, if I'm reading about politics, then I'm actually doing my job right now. But when John Teasdale moved down to San Diego, he had a standing desk that he was getting rid of. We got it. And now I can work on the standing desk in my living room. So now, like, I can write better there because that's my writing place. I don't screw around as much when I'm on that desk, because that's where every morning I wake up, get breakfast, sit down, answer emails, and like prep the newsletter for later in the day. And I can be a lot more efficient writing everything that I then come in here and perform. It's so weird.
Mm-hmm. It's my workspace here, which is really a performance space, only a couple hours a week, unlike yours. There is no instant messenger on my computer. If I wanted to use Facebook, I'd have to go find a password to go log into it because it's not going to automatically log on. I have no iMessage. Skype gets shut down after this podcast is over and isn't open until next week. All notifications are turned off.
Yeah.
You know, and the problem is, you know, like, I think like all of us, and I think different than the composer examples, we all wear so many hats. And sometimes, you know, do I need to work on this project, which is what's going to pay me, or do I need to work on this project, which I hope will pay me next year? And, you know, the balance between those can be problematic.
Yeah.
I don't know. Any advice, Bryce?
I mean, there is like, you have to kind of give stuff priorities, which like a lot of the stuff that, you know, I do for Brian is like, it's a lot of deadline based stuff. So that makes it very structured. Like Mondays, I'm working on these podcasts until late at night. Tuesdays, I'm getting ready for Night Attack or possibly getting ready for something else in the week. Wednesdays, I'm editing for Scam Nation. Thursdays, if we don't have a shoot, I'm either trying to get caught up on like admin stuff. You know, weekends are shoots. And so that routine, having had it for a while, you understand where to fit stuff in best. And so even though we have like auxiliary podcasts, like we had the Bizarre Briefing, which we only do once a month, I have Trending Lemon, which I do every week, and, you know, finding spots to fit those in, is part of that, that queuing process and making sure that there is time within the week to fit in stuff like that, or like the Twitch stream stuff, right? To engage with the community. As far as like, so for me, that priority list is very much time based, because everything kind of needs to get done. But that's a more rigid structure than probably you or Justin have.
Well, I mean, the issue I do like with publishing deadlines, I've always met them and I've always been very happy with what, but I've always thought like, man, if I finished this thing a month or before, I would have loved more time to make it even better. You know, and that's been my problem, is that like, you know, in the book world, you turn the thing in and you get an opportunity to tweak it later on. But the thing you kind of turn in is sort of the thing you turn in, and you have that, oh man, I wish I did this, I wish I did that. And if I'm too wait for the deadlines, mm-hmm. you know, and I've got two books due this summer, right? And like I'm excited, but I'm also know that this is the point at which if I'm going to fail, this is where I'm going to fail. If I'm going to turn into a hack, this is where it's going to happen.
Yeah.
And I don't want that to happen. You know, I want to put more effort, because I noticed a lot of writers, as they're at that point where they can get comfortable, like, I got book deals and stuff, I know what I'm doing, and I can just go on autopilot. And that's when people nosedive. And I'm like, I don't want that. I want my stuff to get better.
I know that you send stuff off to friends to kind of look at. Have you ever put that on a deadline and say, hey, on this day, I'm going to send you a file. If I don't send you a file, ask me about it. To take a look, so that way you have a sort kind of soft deadline, but you have created an obligation with somebody else.
Yeah, I mean, I have a deadline, you know, for one project, because like I've got to go in, you know, a little over a week, go meet with like my publishers, and so I want to be able to say it's done. You know, it's not due, but I want to be able to say that it's done, because I don't want to meet with them and be like, how's it going? And be like, oh, it's coming, you know, it's gonna, you know. And I've been very lucky that, like, you know, I've got like concurrent publishing deals with the same publisher, because I've been delivering on time. Like I don't, most authors, you know, I understand actually when they do publishing, you know, publishers do publishing deals, they often figure out, well, this is the deadline we'll give them, but we know it'll take longer. And I'm like, no, a deadline's a deadline. Like, you tell me to get this done, it'll get done. If I get the flu or something like this, I'll call you and say, okay, I need 5 more days, but I'm not going to ask for a month or 2 month extension, or I'm never, just, that's just not my nature. And because of my reputation for that, I've been afforded more opportunities.
Well, and that is one of those things where it's like, you understand that there is a value, a sort of a mental real estate value, that you know for a fact that you are in the not a problem category in this publisher's mind. And so if you say, yeah, I can get you to, then you know that you're sacrificing that position in their headspace if you don't deliver.
Yeah. And I went through, when I first, you know, worked with my agent, I said, hey, I'm high output, I can turn these things around. Oh, you know, like, cause I remember like, oh, like I had my first deal was like a year to turn in a book. Is that a problem for you? I'm like, a year?
Yeah.
Like, you know, what am I going to do for the other 50 weeks, you know? And so, you know, because it's the way I operate, you know, and then with publishers, like, oh, and then once they saw, like, oh no, he delivers on time and it's good, and the reviews are consistently getting good or better, you know, but that's just, I don't know. I guess point is like, yeah, that's created a lot of opportunity for me. And like, now I'm like, yeah, don't screw this up, because if I screw this up, I don't know what I'm going to do, you know?
Yeah.
Go put together my college magic show. Brian, teach me how to eat fire.
Hey, well.
I got all the props. I can license it out to you. How do you feel about spiking your hair?
Sure.
Now I really just want to see Andrew with the spikes. Oh, my God. I've never thought of that before.
Yeah. I guess it's helpful. Any suggestions, motivational books, things like this that have helped you? Anybody?
I mean, any book on motivation will give you some amount of rocket fuel to go out there and punch the world in the face. If for nothing else, especially audiobooks sort of trap you in a virtuous cycle of visualizing all the things you want to accomplish. And then, you know, that gives you a little bit of a boost to get started.
Brian, I'm going to stop right there. Brian needs to write the book, if anything, because of his aphorisms, anything that gives you the rocket fuel to punch the world in the face. like Punching the World in the Face by Brian Brushwood, A Guide to Getting Rocket. I mean, like, that's
how to steal fire from the gods.
Motivational book would set the world record for metaphors per capita. Like, there would be no doubt this would be jam-packed with so many metaphors, like, it will make your head spin.
It's the Super Bowl. You're on the first yard line. There's 10 seconds left in the game, and the crowd is filled with nanobots living in their eyeballs. How many turquoise gems are you going to put on your necklace? High five.
Or.
You know, every day you're like, do I collect gold coins or do I jump up in the air and bounce my head against the box and find out what's inside? Meanwhile, I dodge those, you know, carnivorous plants, you know, like, you just don't know.
Hey, man, I got a fun pick.
What's your fun pick?
Well, I got a silly short one and then a serious funny one. Serious funny? A real one. The silly short one was I tweeted it out because I hadn't seen it. And I understand. Look, not everyone sees the same thing at the same time. So maybe you guys have already seen it. But if you haven't seen it, do yourself a favor. Buckle in for a 6-minute tour de force by watching a series of Japanese commercials called Long, Long Man. They get increasingly bizarre. It's for some Japanese candy, and each one is like 20 seconds long. And at the end of six minutes, yeah, I feel like I watched a whole season of a TV show. It's amazing.
Yeah, this was a campaign for a stretchy, like, gummy candy.
Yeah,
it's like an epic. It's like it follows this man who trying to win his girl back.
Yeah, well, right? the guy's got a girl, and she thinks he's super cute, but then she sees a guy with a longer gummy strip called Long Man, and she loses her mind, and it just keeps on going from there. The whole thing has a whole narrative to it, and it's really fun and funny. The real pick, I guess, would be I'm finally going back and watching the rest of What We Do in the Shadows, the TV show on FX based on the movie of the same name. I don't suppose any of you gentlemen have watched any of these, have you?
Not yet.
I've not
way
yet, no.
Good. Way, way good. And I don't know if it will entice you. I never know if it's better to explain one of the things that they do later on. But
I'm all on board. Like, I really think the Vampire Council, all this, I'm on board. As a matter
So you know about the Vampire Council scene.
Yeah.
Okay. Cause yeah. Jason didn't tell me what was special about the Vampire Council scene, but when we got to that, I was like, oh my, where it becomes super meta and everything is so great. It's great.
Yeah. I'm on board. I just, that time.
I got a pick. I got an After Things pick. We've been watching this for Chord Killers at chordkillers.com, and I was really taken by how good the makeup design was in this third episode that we watched of Chernobyl.
Those miners really did look naked, didn't they? those are amazing bodysuits.
So. Also, yes. I you know, it's obviously a very tragic, a very awful story. But I've been really taken away with kind of seeing all of the elements. We watched episode 3 for Chord Killers this week, and it starts to get away from the, like, we've got to solve the problems now into how did this happen? And some of the very dark overtones of, like, hey, let's figure out how deep we want to dig into this thing.
Let's also take a brief moment to stare right in the face of what it looks like to die from radiation exposure. Jeez Louise.
Yeah,
that's some grisly stuff.
They really show you the last days of some of those poor firefighters. So I think if you have the chance to really check out Chernobyl on HBO Now, it's good. It's good, man. I think it's good.
Yeah, it's really good. And it's a great starting point afterwards. Go look up what they got right, what they got wrong, and kind of, you know, use it as a starting point to sort of explore, you know, I think that issue.
Sure.
You know, it's just by itself, you will not come away knowing any more about nuclear radiation than you did before watching it. But after watching it and then looking online and other stuff, you'll start to get a grasp, like, okay, they made this part up, but this is an issue. They made this part up, but this is interesting, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So.
I got a pick that kind of actually plugs into our motivation and keeping yourself focused. A guest on Weird Things, a previous guest on Weird Things, Aubrey Sitterson, has a new book out. called No One Left to Fight. It's a Dark Horse Comics, an original concept from him that basically lets him play in the world of a Dragon Ball Z-esque kind of universe that will eventually become a large fighting tournament, I guess, as the story goes on. I read the first issue today. It's awesome if you certainly like professional wrestling or Dragon Ball Z, then you're really much going to you're very much going to enjoy it. But you know, Aubrey is somebody that I've always appreciated his work ethic. But you know, maybe it was a year ago or a year and a half ago, he was got a big break writing for a G.I. Joe comic, and you know, was on Twitter shooting his mouth off one day, said something stupid. It became a gigantic thing. It became an issue about whether or not he was going to get fired from the book. That didn't happen, but eventually he wasn't brought back on another thing.
Cobra Commander had a lot of really good ideas.
Yeah. But, you know, it's beyond all that. You know, he made a point to say, like, all right, look, he'd first come on my radar not as a comic book author, but rather as a professional wrestling commentator with a podcast. I liked his podcast, so that's how we wound up, you know, coming into each other's world. But, like, he dropped doing that, even though he enjoyed it. He significantly cut back on the time he was spending on social media, and pretty much now everything that he does on social media on some level plugs back into what he is doing, either as a creator or there's a lot more tweets about how he is like getting up every day and calling personally comic book shops around the country to make sure that they're aware of the title and that they're calling their distributor to do it. His career has skyrocketed with original stuff. You know, he did the comic book of professional wrestling, which has, you know, since then been kind of lauded by people, fans and practitioners of pro wrestling alike. And this, I'm sure, is going to be a big success with obviously a big publisher in Dark Horse. So a big shout out to Aubrey Sitterson. I'm super pumped to see him get a project like this, an original work, this far. And I think to underline the lessons of this entire episode, just clear the mechanism. Focus on what on what you want to do. You'd be amazed at how far you can go if you are making some decisions in your own life to say, how do we make it bigger? How do we make it better?
Mm-hmm. That's great. Excited. I'd like to look more into that.
That first issue is up on Comixology. I think it comes out in 2 days, but you can find the link on my Twitter at Justin R. Young.
Very cool. Dark Horse was always such a cool brand. Like, they did like the Alien versus Predator, and I mean the Alien series. Remember the Alien run they did that, and the Star Wars runs they did was cool and whatnot. Like, I always thought Dark Horse did some cool stuff, you know, like just more grown up sort of themes on stuff. The Richest Man in Babylon. You know, we've mentioned this book before, but you know, and I know Brian and I both sort of like, one part of the thing we really liked was the whole the expression about the guy talking about walking across the bridge and committing to throw a pebble off every day. And so Richest Man in Babylon was just one of many books that came out in the early part of the 20th century that were these motivational books, because you had a lot of people looking at the world succeeding, and you know, when the stock market went up, people wanted to be successful. When it went down, people wanted to pull themselves out of poverty. And there was a lot of hype, a lot of stuff, but some things survived out of there. There were some books that were written that were actually pretty good, you know, and, you know, How to Win Friends and Influence People is certainly from that era. And Richest Man in Babylon's written as if it were a parable from the time of Babylon. And it's about these men who go to the richest man in Babylon to find out how he became wealthy. And it's just basic advice clothed in the story of as if it were, you know, this historical document. And there's a lot of really, you know, the stuff about willpower was a really big topic in the early part of the 20th century. The idea of what makes one person motivated versus somebody who doesn't. And I think that if you want to figure out what the biggest predictor for success is, somebody's ability to basically demonstrate what we perceive to be willpower. Somebody who says a thing one day and the next day gets it done. I think that's what separates the Jeff Bezoses and Elon Musks from, you know, a lot of other people, is that I'm going to go do this thing. And then they're doing it while other people talk about it. So, no, my pick. Cool. All right. It's been after.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.